Welcome to the SDA Housing Podcast, brought to you by NDIS Property Australia. Before starting this episode, we need to provide a general disclaimer. Information contained in this podcast is general in nature only. It does not take into account the objectives, financial situation, or needs of any particular person. You need to consider your financial situation and needs before making any decisions based on the information in this podcast. And you should consider seeking independent and professional advice for your personal circumstances. All right, let's begin.
Hello, everybody. My name is Min, and I'm your host for today from NDIS Property Australia. And you're here with Debbie, Grace, and Min from the NDIS Property Australia team here in Tasmania. First time here. And we're representing the SDA Housing Podcast, a show that explains, highlights, and guides and brings awareness about all things SDA to the NDIS market. Debbie, Grace, hello.
Hello. Hello.
How are you?
We're good.
How are you finding Tasmania at the moment?
Cold.
It is so, so cold.
Well, Tasmanians have been lovely, but yeah, we had snow last night on the mountain, so there you go.
Yeah.
And it's the end of November.
So for our listeners on our show at the moment, we are sitting at the SDA conference in Hobart, presenting to about 80 different people attending the whole day event. And we're doing, courtesy of Lynn's invite, we're doing a live podcast in front of the whole show, in front of the whole crowd here. Debbie, let's start off one of the questions you may have already put together yourself, if there's no questions popping in from the crowd so far.
Okay. So one of the questions that we have come up with, what are the construction timeframes around Australia at the moment for SDA?
Grace, what's your thoughts in Queensland?
In Queensland at the moment, it's about 15 months, so, which is quite a while. Unfortunately, a lot of our clients who started with us about a year or 2 years ago are now just slowly getting their houses delivered. But the newer stages will be a bit faster. So we're hoping, you know, the construction industry will be pretty good.
I think in Perth, we're looking at about 7 to 10 months if it's a small lot build, small build. A traditional build, we're looking at about 12 to 14 months there. According to Jonathan from Access Living, he's getting through them in about 6-7 months in Melbourne. And the average is looking at 12 to 14 months all up, yeah.
So are there guarantees? Provider-led, participant-led, builder-led? What does all that even mean?
I hate dealing with this question. Grace, how do you deal with this question normally?
Well, realistically, there's no guarantees, but we can try and mitigate a little bit of, by doing basically talking to providers and asking them for what we would call comfort letters to, you know, because some of them have done some research in the area that they work in, and we sort of put that together and present it to the to the buyers. I think Access Living has worked a lot on their end as well, and they've worked very closely with providers. And I think from your podcast, you're saying that 90% of your homes are filled.
97%, I think.
70% or 90%?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So that's a very good track record. The rest of it, basically, we just, once the investor starts the building process, we put them forward to meet up with the SDA providers and work with the SIL providers as well to start finding participants for them at a very early stage. So we don't wait till the end. We give them the opportunity to start looking and working with them as soon as they can to avoid empty houses, basically.
The only guarantee I'll give anyone is I guarantee it'll be a long time to build time frame, and I guarantee it'll be a very big challenge to fill the house up with the expectation of the investor. There's too many investors who are just seeking the three-tenant houses, and the trend is 1.8, as Alison mentioned earlier, 1.8, 1.9 distance per dwelling. We're seeing a lot of one-resident dwellings in Queensland, for sure. And as the numbers were earlier on the screen with Alison, there's a lot going into Queensland there. And that's obviously because of the low land prices, the build costs in the last 3-4 years now, but we're seeing more of a balance, a rollout of product around Australia as more investors are being are more aware of the areas like Tasmania, Adelaide, and Western Australia, Perth, particularly. Yeah.
Next question: what are the best locations to build in, and why?
I think there's that question is two different tangents here. The best location to build in is one way to think of it. The other way is where you should be investing, I think. So I don't know. Does anyone have any answers to that question? There's no right or wrong answer. Yes. Please let me bring you the mic over to Layla.
The best place to build, is that the question? Where the participant is, Salido.
Exactly.
That's it. If you can find where the participant is, Salido, to build it, you'll have the full health.
Unfortunately, everyone asks that question: developers, builders, investors, mum and dad investors, and unfortunately as well, a lot of investors don't even ask that question. A lot of sprugers out there are promoting stock on the basis of 150 grand rent. It happens everywhere. You all see this. You see this on Facebook and social media. It's just silly, right? Run, right? We go across Australia wide and we come across so many builders and so many developers, so many participants, so many providers. And there are a lot of shocking stories out there. There are a lot. My advice to anyone is who's listening to this show and also in the crowd here, do not build to minimum standards. Why accept minimum? Think about future-proofing the asset. I was in the networking event about 2 months ago in Perth with Lynn, and I wrote on a napkin and gave it to an assessor all the things that I would do to a dwelling or a house or whatever to make it future-proof, right? And I'll give you this list right now in front of you all so you hear me, because no one's doing this. No one. And this is the list. Extra storage space. That's number one. No one does that. Hardly anyone. Number two, courtyards to every bedroom, outside of every bedroom. Courtyards. No, hardly anyone does that. Number three, a larger communal bathroom, right, with a hydro tub in there, like an extra large bathroom. I think that's an actual added feature as well. Sensory gardens in the backyard. Too many houses built just to the edge, to the boundary, and this is a yellow lawn in the backyard. That's all there is in the backyard, nothing else. Four, motor vehicles to the dwellings. We've been spending a lot of time the last 3-4 weeks since the Disability Expo. There was a Kia, what's the car? Kia, Staria? Modified to fully accessible. And we've floated this idea to 5 different providers, and they've all agreed this is the way to go. We're now telling our investors, buy a car for every unit complex, 2 or 3, which we're now putting orders in now. We are. One of our builders in Perth is buying a car as a donation to one of our buyers in Perth, right? Because the question here is, how do you track the HBS participant? Yes, it's a 4-bed, 4-bath, 2-car house. It's HBS. Great. It means nothing other than that. How do you ensure you bring in participants that you need for your house as an investor or a developer, right? Future-proof it, extra large. Enhance it, better inclusions, having a vehicle on site. The vehicle costs 85 grand for a 1 participant, 1 wheelchair and driver. 2 wheelchairs, 2 participants is 90 grand. 14, 15 months to put the order in, modify 2 months extra and then add it into the house. It is possible to add an extra 45 grand a year income to the house dwelling by having an asset like that, which is provided by the investor owner to this. We're looking at other development sites in Sunshine, in Woolloongabba, in Liverpool, in Schofields, which are built, under construction, almost built, to add 2, 1, 2, 3 vehicles per site for the 10 to 12 participants. No charge, just there it is. Because participants do have transportation costs as part of the funding with NDIS. So we're looking at other options to enhance the SDA dwelling itself. Do not build to minimum. Have all these little extras to the house. To the site. That's my feedback on additional changes. Yes, please.
Thanks, Ed. That's very interesting to hear you reflect that, and I agree in full with most of what you said, particularly around the additional storage space. One area where I would urge caution is in the therapy bath
what are you proposing there? And at In Have Australia, we are really careful that we don't up-spec to that unless the participant's occupational therapist has deemed it necessary for the participant's disability.
Yes.
Because the last thing that any of us want on our hands is some sort of injury or, praise God, not a fatality even, because we put in something that wasn't prescribed for that
piece
and there's been some sort of tragedy come out.
Yep.
So anyone listening, I just urge caution on some of that up-speaking that you're doing. You need the allied and those professionals to approve it.
Totally agree. Again, these are ideas and options to consider as you're building different product around Australia. Right? ROBUS, HBS, FAIL. You know, we see the numbers. The stats are 70%, 10%, 10%, 10%. 7% IL, 10% ROBUS, 10% FA, 10% HBS. They're the true breakdown numbers of SDA in the marketplace. However, the pipeline builds are 53% HBS, 29%, 23% FA, 9% ROBUS, and I think it's 20-something percent for IL. The pipeline builds are not going towards what it should be. There's not enough. We are very bullish on ILs and ROBUS. Unfortunately, as we all know, the cost of construction to build a dwelling for a one-tenant ROBUS house to get a second person in is very hard. I mean, as I had a meeting with Alison in Melbourne about a month ago, 80% of ROBUS participants only cannot share with anyone else. So 20% of ROBUS participants are able to share. So right now I have three houses, one built and two under construction now at a factory in ROBUS in Melbourne. 4-bed, 2-bath, 2-car. Unfortunately, they're realistically going to be only one-tenant houses. That's okay because that was the worst-case scenario anyway. So in the rare event that there is a second participant in the future for ROBUS, then great, so be it. So there are different investors with different risk profiles, different budgets for different demographics and areas. So we, as a team, we do go across the whole market and we scour with our data and access to builders and developers to build to demand, fit for purpose around Australia. Sometimes a lot of developers come to us with built stock. They want exit. And we'll take it out with our buyers, be it one line buyer or 10 other individual buyers. The demand is there. I don't want to go on a tangent here, but next question, Debbie or Erin?
Yeah, absolutely. You've actually answered the next question on our list, which was how to make your property more appealing to tenants. The next question, what potential challenges might investors face in the coming year or so?
Well, the last year, Grace, would you agree that it's been pretty much valuation, finance and construction completions?
Absolutely. Those are the three things that has actually made it quite difficult. The main thing at the moment now is really interest rate. What we're finding is with the interest rate hike, the numbers of investors coming through are quite slim. But, you know, on the other side of scale for us, we're getting a lot more people from the corporate side of things, more bulk buyers, more fund managers coming to us saying, hey, we want to buy. What we want you to do is fill the house up and we'll take a flat rate on it and we'll be more interested in that. So that's quite good too.
I want to talk about the corporate buyers just for 2 minutes. The bond market, Australian bonds, government bonds, okay? A year ago, the interest rates were 2.5-3% rate a year ago. And since then, we've seen like 5 or 6 hikes since then. So when the interest rates were, the rates were whatever it was, the bond market was 4-5%. So the fund managers go in at market cap rate of 8%. So they'll go with the calculation, due diligence, feasibilities, and do the calculations as takeout buyers. Now the interest rates are now 4-5%. The bond rates are 7%-ish. That means you put a dollar into the bond market and get a guaranteed 7% return. So why would you invest in an SDA at 6.5-8%? Why would you do that? You wouldn't. So their market cap rate now is 9-10%. So their valuation profiling of SDA is now different as from 6 months ago. Right? So takeout buyers, right, and we get a lot of resales here. A lot of resellers come to us and my house is empty. How do I get out of it? How do I recoup my money? Luckily, we had two or three who are resellers of empty houses in Brisbane, and they wanted premium price. And me and Grace were very surprised what they wanted. They went in at $750, they wanted $1.2 million, and they're getting $1.2 million offers. I was shocked, but they're getting it, right? They're getting it. Desperate buyers went into the market, so they'll pay the premium price.
But also because they don't want to wait for build time, because everybody's aware that build time is taking so long. So something is ready, they're happy to pay $200,000 to $300,000 premium on that to get it ready straight away.
So there's a large syndicate in the marketplace. I won't mention their name. It's composed of 30 civil providers and some housing providers in there. And they're acquiring everything they can that's empty because they have discounts in their system of 20 or so providers in one hit as a syndicate. So they're out there acquiring. The fund managers are out there acquiring with their due diligence as well. We try to stress to these developers who are newbies, do not build to minimum standards because you're going to end up with a flawed product model in the future. Let's move on to next question, if there is one.
Yeah. Okay. Bit of a different slanty. What are the demand and stats for Hobart, since we're in Hobart and talking about it specifically today?
Debbie, I'll let you answer that.
Okay, with my two mics. Thank you. Okay, so I know we've already been through these stats today, but just for the benefit of our listeners on the podcast today, the stats in Tasmania are really still very low. We're looking at a total of 251 enrolled dwellings statewide, and this is based on stats as the NDIA stats as of the 30th of June this year. Existing and legacy 27 in kind, which is a unique component only in Tasmania. That's the state-run old-style disability housing. Only 21 new build dwellings in the entire state, of which we have, and this is interesting, 6 of the new build that are not basic, we have 62 are improved livability, 29 fully accessible, 8 robust, and only 4 are high physical support. That's the enrolled dwellings. We move on to the pipeline dwellings, again based on the NDIA stats. 22 in total, 11 high physical support, so that's 50%. 6 robust, 3 IL, 2 FA. So maybe Tasmania has learned something from the other states, or maybe they just know that there are different makeup of participants here and requirements. But so that those stats are quite different to the regular stats that are coming.
Yeah, and I'll cover some information, some stats from Jonathan from Access Living up at the end of the day here about what they're doing in Tasmania, because there's definitely a big demand for this. And as Alison said earlier today, it doesn't worry about all the excess or the large number of volume of HPS houses being built in Queensland or wherever. Because why? Because their ILs need somewhere to go. They need to go somewhere because no one's building the ILs, not really. So if there's a lot of empty HPS houses out there, they'll be getting them in. And with the price changes in July 2023, 5-year review, I think you'll see a nice little bump up with the ILs for sure in that category there. I mean, I had a lot of meeting with other providers in Queensland, and they say, look, CPI reflection there will occur in April, May there, and then hopefully, fingers crossed, the July 23 price review will come in there, and we might see 10 to 15, I'm hoping 20% uplift in the revenue there by middle or late next year there from all those numbers, but we'll see what happens.
I want to just go on to the other side of the stats, the demand, very quickly.
Yes.
We also talked about this earlier today, but basically in Tasmania currently there are a total of 493 SDA-funded participants, of which 420 are currently in a dwelling. 73, that's 15%, are looking for an alternate dwelling or for a dwelling. Of those, the breakdown of stats, it's fairly even actually. We've got 19 are high physical support, 16 fully accessible, 21 improved livability, 1 is looking for robust. 16% are not defined. Mm. Well, CNDIA don't have perfect stats, unfortunately, which makes all of this statistic delving hit and miss. Yeah. We can only do what we can with the information we've got, really.
Mm. I want to raise it on topic that Alison raised earlier, MTA, STA, right? I've been studying this marketplace for the STA, MTA market for 2 years now, and I've been just watching, guiding, just studying it, talking to people. Here's the question that everyone's asking. What if I build a house or a unit or a complex in wherever and it's empty? Or there are some houses or some units empty. The STA, MTA marketplace is your backup. It really is. As Alison said, it's 100% of the marketplace. The participants who are in hospitals or in emergency care, they go somewhere, they're going to MTA or STA. The funding is there to look after them. So don't think that if it's not HPS, I'm only stuck with IL. There's also other alternatives like the MTA, STA market. So 140 bucks a day, right? Think about this. 7 days a week, times 140 is how much? 1,000. It's 1,000 a week per room. Participant, you got three rooms or two rooms, right? Yeah, close enough. Yeah, two rooms that being used as MTA. That's 2,000 a week right there. It's 100 grand a year. That's not far off from IL and HBS, is it? So don't think that an empty HBS is useless. It can be used for other meetings like this. So I want to tell you something as well. This is on the crunch as well I told Alison HBS. Is 0.00372% of the marketplace. 0.003%. That means 99.997%, whatever that number is, of the remaining number is not. So all those investors chasing HPS are wheelchair bound participants, they're not going to get them. There's not enough going around. There's just so much being built in there. So just be warned, lower your expectations if you're an investor, because you may not get the ideal perfect investor.
Sorry, this isn't right here, but the question, the statistic you've just quoted around HBS,
yes,
I believe you're taking that across the entire.
Yes, correct.
Not just
yes,
the
my bad. The yeah, answer. That's what I meant to say. I was thinking too fast. I'm sorry.
Correct.
You know me.
Yeah, and that's across the every.
And how did I come with that? 10% of that 20,000 is 2,000, right? 2,000 HPSs in theory, right? 2,000 of the 555,000, there's your number right there. Right? So if you add the FAs and HPS numbers in theory, that's 0.003772 times 2. It's a very limited number there. But we're glad that there's a lot of HPSs being built because that means there's more stock to fill up with IO participants in the marketplace. Next question, Debbie.
Okay, you caught me. Unawares. Okay, we have. Can we have a show of hands? Knowing what you know about STA, do you think houses or apartments are more appealing? Houses.
Hands up for houses. That's 2/3 of the room. Hands up for units. There's no right or wrong answer. There is no right or wrong answer. Yes.
He uses choice and control over things.
Yeah.
And having guides through a different accommodation. I think that apartment thing, that's different people and locations, they're close amenities. Mm-hmm. But then other things do what?
For example, New South Wales and Sydney, you can't do house and land. It's just too expensive to buy the land, knock down rebuilds. It's $1.7 million for an old house, knock it down. Build a HBS, you're looking at $2.5 million a lot for $100,000 rent. That's sweet. $100,000 on $2.5 million. That's not feasible. So in some parts of Australia, it's not feasible to do house and land or houses. And also because the available land to build these houses are just too far out, away from family, away from infrastructure as well. So that's also another factor. So there is no right or wrong answer, right? It's just it's what they like, their lifestyle they want to live.
Yeah.
Any more questions?
That's it for our questions. Anyone in the audience have a question they'd like to ask?
Just an observation and a comment more than anything, but I hear a lot about 2, 3, and 4 bedrooms. As a single provider, we don't want. I would prefer to have one bedroom individual units because you don't have capacity, you don't have compatibility issues, but those units share common support. So that's the model that works from a provider perspective because you get the benefit of the multiple participants and support, but you don't have the capacity issues and therefore you don't have vacancies. And if you as a provider are holding a head lease over, you're paying the rent even if it's empty.
Yep. Also, economies of scale, having multiple participants at one location and having the workers there servicing, yeah, much more efficiency. There's a lot of talk about the lack of profit margin for silk providers in the marketplace. And we have houses side by side, duplexes or six in one location, having lots of a number of support workers on site. That adds to their profitability of the business. Because if not making profit, how do you operate long term? Yeah. Any more questions?
Just on approvals, I'm not sure if this is your space, but speak to a group recently. They say they're now doing quite in front scale type of upper building, and they say, well, we're going to get 10 participants in here. Six of them aren't actually approved for SDA at the level that they wanted.
Yes.
Some have got a really good track record of disputing that and getting a resolution. Is that still the case? Most requests aren't for the result, isn't what they actually want, and they have to appeal, or do we feel the appeals are getting less and less because the approvals are coming in where they're supposed to be?
As a matter of fact, it's a complex answer, and I'm probably dealing with it in my thought next. Most of the news is positive, and so the change of governance is seen a different culture, decision making, and decisions, and better resolution of matters of the administrative level. So the trend is good, and probably lead more data around that for on a meter.
Yeah. We publish two episodes a week. We encourage you to come talk to us, talk to one of our staff. If you would like to share your SDA journey, be it a developer, a builder, a provider, a participant, we love hearing stories about SDA, and we try and interview as many people around Australia as possible about SDA itself to bring awareness to the community around Australia about what it's all about. Because there's so much more. SDA is a very complex topic inside the NDIS itself. So we thank you for your time, everyone. We'd love to interview you more if you have the chance to sit down with us for 20, 30 minutes the next 2 or 3 days to do so. So thank you very much, guys. Cheers.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. Please make sure you are subscribed and following us so you can keep in the loop with all of our upcoming episodes. We would really appreciate it if you could leave us a 5-star rating, a written review, and to share this podcast with those that could benefit. Until next time, catch you on the next episode.